all of this was on the backdrop of not having my dad around, you know? So, you know, I think growing up, there were certain moments where, like, where I noticed it. Like, for example, I played baseball as a kid. I loved baseball. And every year I never got picked for the All-Star team, even though I was really good. And I would look at all the kids that got picked for the All-Star team, and all of them, every single one, had a dad who was coaching. And so for me, it was like really evident, like, okay. You know, there's, because my dad's not around, like, maybe that's not why I made the All-Star team.
Hey guys, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast, where we chat about exactly that, dads building their family teams. Every week, me and my friend and mentor, Jeremy Pryor, alternate interviewing another father friend of ours about his particular journey as a father, pursuing the call to build a multi-generational team on mission. As always, let us know what you thought of today's episode on social media at Family Teams. And without further ado, enjoy today's episode.
All right. Well, welcome to the Dads Building Teams podcast. I have a special guest on with me today, Ryan Rucker. Ryan, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. Man, so this is a long time in coming, but we've been interacting online for, what, almost 2 years now or something, yeah? Well, how long has it been?
Yeah, about a year and a half. It was like right around the beginning of 2019 when I started seeing Family Teams and getting connected. And yeah, that's when I joined. So a year and a half.
Man, that's awesome. So Ryan's really one of the first people that jumped into our 5-Minute Fatherhood Facebook group and has been really active in introducing people, dads, to the group and just interacting with dads on there. And it's been super awesome to finally get to talk to you. So you live in, how do you pronounce it? Vacaville, California?
Vacaville.
Vacaville.
Yeah, Vacaville. Thank you. Short for Cowtown.
Okay. Yeah. Like, how did you end up there? And tell us a little bit about your family, who's on your team and where you guys live and stuff like that.
Yeah. So I so appreciate this conversation. I've been in Vacaville since 2001. I was born in 86 in upstate New York in a town called Queensbury, New York. So that's originally where I'm from. Okay. And then when I was 14, me and my mom, actually, we moved out from upstate New York to Vacaville, California to be with my now stepdad. So we've been out here ever since. I moved around a little bit, like post high school and around college age. But yeah, then I've been in Northern California pretty much ever since. So that's what brought us out here. But, you know, me and my wife, we've been married now for 7 years next month. We have two daughters, and we are just having so much fun together as a family team. Especially this year, I think there's been so much time spent together as a family. We've, you know, been forced to quarantine and just be at home. And selfishly, like, I really enjoy just being at home with the family.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where we are, but we have a lot of fun together.
And you work for Blue Apron. Now, were you recruiting in, or I'm sorry, were you like commuting in, and then the COVID hit and now you're working from home a lot? Is that kind of the transition?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. My team has been great. My boss is great. So pre-COVID, I would work from home 2 days a week and then go into the office 3 days a week. My office is about an hour away with traffic and whatnot.
Yeah.
So once COVID hit, you know, a lot of people started kind of stepping back and working all remotely. Now, my job with Blue Apron, since nobody wanted to go out in public and go to restaurants, everyone started ordering Blue Apron. So our meal kits actually shot through the roof.
Yes.
And so it was interesting because since March, I've been seeing all these people talk about these projects that they've been working on and all this leisure time that they've had. And I'm like, I've never been so busy professionally in my life, which obviously is a beautiful thing because, like, I have great job security, which is awesome. I've got a great team. My company's great. But it's been pretty busy. So I go into work about once or twice a week just for new hire orientation because we've been hiring like crazy.
Yeah.
It's been fun to say the least.
Yeah. That's a mixed blessing. I know to have everything gets super busy at the same time, yeah, when a lot of people are enjoying and obviously struggling a ton with being out of work, being at home, being stuck. Now, one of the things that's been really fun to follow, Ryan, that you do is you own this ice cream business that you and your daughter began. I'd love just to hear about that. And like, so what inspired you to start that? I know this was obviously pre-COVID because I remember seeing the stuff pop up about this for a while. So tell me, what's that business about? And yeah, what inspired that?
Yeah, so I run a company called Be Ice Cream or Be Nothing. And in 2015, I was in New York. I was helping my grandparents move out to California. And while I was out there, you know, every single night I was just eating different ice cream. And I realized that so much of my childhood, so many of our memories were based on ice cream. And it just brought something back. So when I came back to California, I was like, oh, I want to get some good local ice cream. And they're just, at least in my town, there was nothing local. And when I say local, I mean like you go to the store and you might see the owner like purchasing the ingredients that you know is going to go into the ice cream, things like that. Mm-hmm, right. So I was like, I sat back and I was like, well, ice cream can't be that tough to make, can it? Mm-hmm. So I made a batch, put it in the freezer. And like, while the quality wasn't great, like the flavor was incredible. So then my wife was actually like, why don't you get an ice cream machine? Like they're not that expensive. So, you know, I think we got one for $70. It's actually the one that I still have 5 years later. Hmm. And, you know, just started making ice cream. You know, we had kids and, you know, like we talked about earlier, I have a full-time job. So I've been in HR for a couple of years now, but this was just something fun to do on the side. But honestly, for the past like 2-3 years, you know, it's been such a fun opportunity for me to take, you know, my oldest daughter, Reagan, and for us to be able to create memories together. And even how our ice cream videos came about is one night my wife is at work. I think she was out of town. And I was like, what are me and my 18-month-old going to do tonight? Mm-hmm. So actually we just took the Instagram, stories and we just started making ice cream together. And the next morning, a lot of my friends were like, that was incredible. Oh, yes. And even for her, she just had so much joy in making it that I was like, as a dad, this is a really cool way for us to build connection. So first it just started off as something fun. And then somebody was like, hey, you should start a YouTube channel. So we started a YouTube channel. And really now my whole goal is to encourage other families, especially dads, to get in the kitchen and create memories with their kids. Because like when I think of like family memories, it's Thanksgiving, yeah. It's Christmas, it's holidays, you know, where families are in the kitchen, whether it's arguing or just creating something delicious for all of us to sit down at the table, whether it be a Shabbat, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And for us to just have great conversation over meals. And from a kid's perspective, what better way to create memories in the kitchen together than making ice cream? So that's what we've been doing. So I have two things. We do make the videos. We teach people how to do it. But then I also have an operation out of a local coffee shop in Vacaville called Journey Coffee. Okay. Where I have like a legit ice cream machine in there. I've got the food handling license, all that. Mm-hmm. And I make ice cream specifically for their business. And I just have so much fun doing it.
That is so cool, man. I love it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many layers. I mean, I love the layer and what you're saying on Instagram, really working to help dads, inspire dads to create memories in the kitchen. I know that one of the things that we've noticed that's most dramatic about multi-generational families and families that just don't tend to last. It is the way that they treat kitchen table. It's their ability to steward that. And so for a lot of dads who may have grown up sort of seeing that as a hobby that, that they may or may not be into, that they may want, you know, maybe that's something their wife wants to do. Seeing it as sort of an option, like maybe I just avoid the kitchen. Maybe I don't like to cook. Maybe I don't enjoy food. Maybe I don't contribute at all to those kitchen and table memories. That's, you know, that's obviously something that Jeff and I have kind of gone to war against. Like, guys, this is much more critical than you think. It's not whether or not you happen to have, you know, some personal interest in cooking or something like a hobby. Mm-hmm. This is the heart of the family. This is where things happen. This is how you craft culture. It starts in the kitchen and around the table. And I love what you're doing. I mean, this is, you know, that having a heart for that, and how have you seen that affect the culture of your family, having this business and having you really involved in the kitchen there?
Yeah, great question. You know, I think I've seen it really affect our family in a couple ways. Number one, from our launch night in 2017, you know, we launched right before Christmas in 2017. So it's cold. I mean, you know, it's California, so take it with a grain of salt. But, you know, it was a colder day. And just seeing how many of our friends and family came out to support was like, wow, this is really impressive. You know, I think we had over 100 people that first night just come and help support, and which was a lot of fun. And then from a family perspective, you know, really just seeing, even just things educationally for my daughter, Reagan. You know, Reagan turns 4 next month. Mm. And the way she's able to pick up on like other numbers and measurements, just whether we're doing whether we're using Play-Doh, yeah, or whether we're just in the back using rocks, like whatever it is, like I see her brain think a little bit differently because we work on the measurements so much. We have to be methodical in the kitchen. And I've seen that kind of roll over in a lot of different aspects, whether it be in school or just with other friends, you know, so it's been a lot of fun, not only just in the kitchen, just like making the actual ice cream. Educationally, I really think she's picking up something really impressive. And then on top of that, you know, me and my wife, we actually lead a group of young adults through our church. So we have, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 young adults come over every other week to our home. Obviously, COVID not excluded. It's been different for the past couple of months. But, you know, for the past couple of years, Ray and I will make ice cream together. And then at the end of our small group, like we go through questions, we pray. And then it's like, all right, like, let's test out the ice cream. So it's even to have Reagan seeing other people testing our ice cream, for us, it's just so much fun. And for her to see, like, here's something I created. Yes. And now, like, here's people actually enjoying it. It's been cool. And then on top of that, yesterday, actually, we created her own flavor. So she actually made her own recipe.
Nice.
I mean,
what was it?
Yeah, down to... Oh, it's called race car ice cream. And it's really funny because she's been talking about it for a year. I think a year ago, I asked her on video, what's your favorite ice cream? Expecting her to say like cookies and cream or cookie dough. Yeah. And she just goes, race car ice cream. I was like, what is it? I have no idea what race car ice cream is. And then for months, I still didn't know. And then one day she had finally explained like, oh, it's got red strawberries and red raspberries and red cherries and red peaches and red donuts. And I was like, and donuts, what? So lo and behold, this weekend, we, you know, since it's peach season, we finally put it together. But yeah, we made her own recipe. She told me exactly how many raspberries and how many strawberries. Mm. Like, she created it. And yeah, we scooped it out, and I posted a picture on my personal Instagram last night, and today I'm going to do it on the Be Ice Cream or Be Nothing Instagram account. Oh, but man, it was just so cool because like she's not even 4 yet, and she's already creating like ice cream recipes on her own. And you know, just as a dad, it's so much fun for me to see that because she just has so much joy in it. And then I, of course, take joy in the fact that she loves it too.
Yeah, that's so amazing.
It's been great.
Well, yeah, one of the conversations we've been, and I get asked this constantly. I've been asked multiple times in the last few days, families that have sort of said, okay, we want to build assets, or we want to like have some kind of business or entrepreneurial venture that is, you know, more something we can own. And, and I always like, man, if there's any way for it to be with your kids, you know, that it's not just something that's separate. And then I've become, especially because of COVID, personally, I've really increased the value of anything that has to do with food, anything that's more basic, you know, anything that people are going to want, because, you know, if things start to shut down or, you know, and so you've got really, you're checking all three of those boxes with this business. You know, it's a food business. It's a business you're doing with your daughter. It's something that, you know, you're creating productivity. You're actually, and it was something that happens with kids when they do sit there and really experience sort of the economics of business ownership. It's a really, I love that. Do you have any, sort of two questions that are similar. Any future ambitions for Be Ice Cream, that you would love to see it turn into over time, or is it more of a side thing permanently? I'd love to hear about that. And then any words you would have for dads who've like been on the fence, like should I try an entrepreneurial thing? But does that make sense? Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. But what are your thoughts about the future?
Sure. For sure. No, great questions. I think, you know, regarding the first question, I would love to see it turn into something different. And it's funny because even that, since having kids, has really evolved. I think 5 years ago, I was like, oh, I want my own ice cream shop, create my own flavors. I'll put on my headphones, listen to music, make ice cream all day. Like, that was the goal 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And then we had kids, and, you know, then things changed because, you know, I have a great stable job, you know, with Blue Apron, even prior, you know, things were always good there. So it was like, of course, I don't want to rock the boat. Like, mm-hmm. I want to be able to provide for my family and take care of them. It's not all about just, you know, hey, what dad wants to do.
Yeah.
And so then the mindset started changing a little bit. But then really, honestly, since being a part of Family Teams, I've really taken it and seen, all right, how can we as a family make this something more impactful? So that's why I've really put more of an emphasis in the past year and a half on the videos themselves, because now, you know, having an ice cream shop would be wonderful. Like, I would absolutely love that. Mm-hmm. But what I would love probably just as much, if not more, is to be able to have a bigger platform where these videos take off a little bit more, where we can, you know, maybe tour and teach other people like in person how to make ice cream together. One of my really big goals right now, which is such a pipe dream that I just want to speak into existence and just really pray about, is I would love to write a children's ice cream recipe cookbook. There's a number of great ice cream books out there, from Jenny's Ice Cream, Salt and Straw has one. There's just so many. But I would love to create like a children's story that incorporates making ice cream. So whether it's a dad and daughter or an entire family making ice cream together, I would just love to tell that children's story while also having some recipes in there. Man. You know, and that way, you know, we can just really encourage families again to get in the kitchen and just create some memories together. Making ice cream is so much fun. Eating ice cream is so much fun. Yeah. And I just wanted to, just be a part of that. So not only the stores, but, you know, books, you know, bigger videos, and just really, whether it even be going on like the Today Show, we've done a local show. We did Good Day Sacramento about a year ago. Okay. So Reagan and I went on there to teach their host how to make ice cream. And it was so much fun. I thought Ray would be a little nervous. And then all of a sudden at the end of the segment, she takes the entire bowl and just puts it over her head and just is eating all ice cream. Like things that she does at home.
Yeah.
She couldn't care less about the camera. So for me, I just want this to be a family endeavor. For us to just really create memories and have fun.
Man, that's awesome.
Oh, and then the second part, in terms of how, you know, maybe some other dads who are thinking of getting into it. You know, for me, I had a really good opportunity to go to Journey Coffee and test out our product, quite frankly. I'm not in the position where I want to like take on loans and do all these things. Like we're really building the foundation of our family right now. So at this current time, I don't want to really rock the boat. That's just not the season that I'm in, quite frankly. And with COVID, that's a whole nother, you know, situation. But really just get people that can speak into your lives, who can really tell you if your idea is good. Is it productive? Is it worthy of kind of taking in some additional revenue? I think a lot of people want to start projects that are just fun and life-giving, but it's like, all right, if you are going to take X amount of time away from your family to focus on this project, what is the return on investment going to be? And for me, that's why I invested in a really large industrial size ice cream maker for Journey. It's because I can go in and make 3 weeks worth of ice cream in 2 hours. You know, so when people say like, wait a minute, you supply ice cream for two shops like throughout the summer, like that's got to be crazy. I'm like, you know, it can be like the planning is a little bit difficult at times, but quite frankly, the reason I spent more on a bigger machine is so I can, you know, do the output quicker. So again, like I just went in on, was it Saturday, I think it was, and I made about 3 or 4 gallons of ice cream in just over an hour. You know, and that's, I mean, I can walk my dogs in that same amount of time, which is still additionally, of course, but you know, I'm not taking a ton of time away from my family to build this. And that was really important to me. And it's increasingly becoming more important to me because everything I want to do, I want my family to be involved with. Of course, my daughters do not make the ice cream that we sell to customers, but, you know, they get to see the product, they taste the product, and, you know, we have a lot of fun. So, so for other dads, I think just getting input from other people who can genuinely speak into their lives is going to be really important.
Yeah, that's awesome. And just learning the production process, learning the customer experience when you're kind of wholesaling with a particular shop like Journey, and then I just think that gives families a whole nother dimension. And I think when your kids are really little and they can't necessarily actually produce product for customers, you know, it may not be a great time to expand what you're learning and the foundation you're building, if you ever did want to like push more into that direction, work more with your kids, you know, that becomes an option. And that's, for a lot of that's really the way it works. It's not something a lot of people are like wondering, so do I quit my job and start a business? I'm like, no, it's way better to do it this way. You know, like have something going on the side, like really learn that particular business, you know, and I love the fact that by getting the larger ice cream maker, you've been able to work it a lot better into your family's rhythm so that you don't, you know, it doesn't eat up tons of your time given the fact that you're also working full time. So yeah, that's so cool, man. I love that story and I love what you're doing and I hope dads check it out.
Thank you.
And I love too the fact that I love the vision of like training other dads who want to do this. So similarly, like we've had, you know, lots of discussions about grilling and meat. And so I think we need to start mm-hmm. more discussions about ice cream. And
oh, 100%. The grill debate that you guys had was phenomenal. So if there's any ice cream debate, like count me in.
Okay. The great ice cream maker debate will be coming there shortly.
There we go. I like it.
So Ryan, I wanted to take a step back and talk a little bit about just your journey, your story of, into fatherhood. To kind of mm-hmm. take us back, and we've talked and I've read a really amazing article that you wrote. I loved it, about just your journey as a father and your journey growing up and how those things interrelate. So tell us a little bit about your growing up years, how they've impacted you and how they've impacted your fatherhood.
Yeah, for sure. So, like I said earlier, I grew up in upstate New York. And for those who cannot see me or don't know me, I'm African-American. I'm black. I'm half black, half white. And upstate New York, at least the town that I grew up in, is predominantly white. And, when I was two, my biological father, who was black, he had left my family. And he didn't come back for the rest of my childhood. And it was really interesting. I think more looking back on it now, like as a dad, because as a kid, my mom completely sacrificed everything in her life to make sure that my childhood was not affected by that. You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
My grandparents, when I was eight, they moved in to the home literally next door, like literally attached to our home, to make sure that they were always there. Like my grandma, my mom were just so instrumental in my entire life. Mm. And, so when I grew up, I just had all sorts of friends. I mean, we rode bikes everywhere. I played basketball everywhere. My mom sent me to every basketball camp imaginable. And all of this was on the backdrop of not having my dad around, I think growing up, there were certain moments where I noticed it. Like, for example, I played baseball as a kid. I loved baseball. And every year I never got picked for the All-Star team, even though I was really good. And I would look at all the kids that got picked for the All-Star team, and all of them, every single one, had a dad who was coaching. Hmm. And so for me, it was like really evident, like, because my dad's not around, like maybe that's not why I made the All-Star team. And then additionally, just as a black kid growing up in a predominantly white town, there were, of course, in the late 80s and early 90s, there were a lot of people who hadn't seen anybody like me, quite frankly, around Queensbury and around like the greater upstate area. So even that presented a lot of challenges. Like my mom actually a couple of years ago told me the story that thankfully I'd forgotten, but she had told me a story when I was probably six or seven, and I was playing on the playground with a number of kids, and we were playing cops and robbers. And throughout the entire game, everybody was trading places in terms of who they wanted to be. And I wanted to be a cop because, being the robber wasn't fun, but the kids I was playing with wouldn't let me be the cop because black people look like the robbers. Like they just wouldn't let me be the cop. And like, that was something I went home and cried to my mom about. But what was interesting is that I, at the time, cried because I just wanted to be the cop. But my mom clearly understood, this is a race thing. Yeah. And not like these kids necessarily saw me and were like blatantly like, I'm going to be racist to Ryan today. I don't think that was the case, but I think that really spoke to some of the internal feelings that people have and that, kind of rub off on kids as well. Mm-hmm. So even that was really challenging to kind of walk through as a kid. And, even now just really talking to my mom about what it was like to raise a black son in a predominantly white area. Mm-hmm. She's very honest with me now in terms of the challenges, like with kids who assume that I was adopted and assume that I was a welfare child, I think is how people used to ask her all the time. And, I think it was just challenging for all of us. A lot of regards, and that we ended up, coming to California when I was 14, and my stepdad, who is black now, or has always been black, but, so the three of us, now we have our family unit. And I think making that move, as much as I hated it at the time, was really beneficial, because I think my mom understood that like we needed a different way of life. Like we needed just more than upstate New York could give us. As much as I love upstate New York, it wasn't until I came to California where I got to really have other friends who were Black. I got to understand what society was like, what culture was like. And at least in my neck of the woods and in Queensbury, as much as I love Queensbury, I didn't have that growing up. And it was really important for me to get that at some point, even though I didn't necessarily know that at the time. And all of that has really played into my own fatherhood, because I saw the absence that my dad had left, not only for myself, but really especially for my mom. And that's in part why I've always wanted to be a dad. Like, there was never any doubt in my life that I wanted to be a dad. So then when I became one, and when I knew I was going to become one, it was really all about prepping for my kids, for my daughters, about how I can be the most involved, the most active, you know, to not only overcome the insecurities that I have within myself as a dad, as a Black dad, but to overcome some of the insecurities that I have within myself because my dad did leave, which is really, really still has an effect on me to this day.
Well, Ryan, why did you go that direction? Because I know a lot of people experience that pain and they react against fatherhood. You know, that's a really common story, but you seem to push into it.
Yeah. You know, I think, you know, in sports and really in life in general, like, you know, have you ever had somebody that just tells you like, you can't do something, or maybe, you know, we've all been there in one way or another. It's like, oh, you can't make that shot. Oh, watch me. I'll make this half court shot. You know, so I think in fatherhood, I've always had this internal voice telling me like, oh, you're not supposed to be a good father. You're not supposed to be there. You're supposed to leave. Like, what do you, and I just always had that. And, you know, because my own dad left, but also because, you know, if you just Google Black fathers, like some of the first out of the first 10 articles that Google's going to show you, the majority of them have to do with Black fathers leaving. And there's just really ugly stereotype about Black fathers leaving. And, you know, I don't want to get too much into the stereotype because like it's hurtful for me because my dad who was Black did leave. Yeah. And there's a book that I'm reading right now by Omar Epps, actor from Love and Basketball, who has a great book called, From Fatherless to Fatherhood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a very similar story. You know, President Barack Obama, like in his memoir in 95, Dreams mm-hmm. for My Father, talks about his Black father leaving and abandoning his family and all these different things. So there's so many prominent stories throughout life. And I always felt like, I don't know, when people look at me as a dad, I always just felt like somebody expected me to leave. And that was really hurtful. So I feel like even today, like I'm trying to overcome some of these barriers that other people have placed in my life. And quite frankly, a lot of that is internal. And these are things that I'm still working through, that I've worked through therapy, that I've worked through just, you know, through myself and through my family. But yeah, I think it's something I'm always going to have to overcome, unfortunately, no matter how involved I am. And I am a very involved dad.
Yeah.
Hey guys, did you know that me and Jeremy created a special fatherhood masterclass we do online called The Skill of Fatherhood? If you want to immediately level up your father skills and learn an entire system with tips and tricks and philosophy and help that we believe can fundamentally change your family's life forever, then this masterclass is for you. There's an entire module on the skill of training your kids with about 8 teaching videos in that one. There's an entire module you get on the skill of coaching your family as a team on mission with 8 or more videos in that one, including multiple interviews with a bunch of families doing this and how they do that, and an entire module on the skill of building multi-generational legacy and vision for your family with about 7 or 8 videos on that. The masterclass also comes with a workbook that walks you through the process so you never feel overwhelmed but feel equipped and encouraged and ready to start leading your family in a bigger and better direction starting today. And we wanted to hook you guys up. So our podcast listeners, if that's you and you're listening, we want to give you an exclusive deal that we aren't doing anywhere else online. So if you want to get $20 off the masterclass right now today, then head to familyteams.com and use the code DADS. That's DADS at familyteams.com. Again, that's the code DADS to get $20 off at familyteams.com.
Well, it sounds like part of that is really understanding your history. Like it sounds like mm-hmm. you're you're doing a lot of the hard work. I think a lot of times as dads, it's really dangerous if you forget the past that made you completely and just think, no, I'm just going to be different, because oftentimes that stuff is deep in you and it comes out in really unhealthy ways. And you were mentioning to me that you have had, you started interviewing your biological father for a docuseries. I'd love to hear, so that's going to be a podcast coming up. I think you're going to try to release in September. I'd love, that's like, tell me about that. Like what motivated you to have those conversations with your dad, and what did you learn?
Yeah. So, you know, me and my biological dad, we first met when I was 20, and he'd reached out to me when I was 19. When I was in 20, he's still back in the East Coast. So while I was in 2007, I spent the summer back in Lake George, New York. And, you know, he actually came out and we met for the first time. And, you know, so we've chatted, I don't know, we'll talk maybe once a year since then. A lot of it is pretty surface level. You know, while the first time we did meet, I asked some pretty tough questions, you know, since then, you know, I was able to forgive him, which is a whole nother thing. But you know, especially being a Christian, I know so much of our foundation is based off of forgiveness. And so that was something I really had to work within myself to be able to give him that gift, because I wasn't only forgiving him, I was really kind of releasing that burden for myself, which is really important for me. But for the past 13 years, we'll talk every so often, you know, he'll send my daughter's gifts, which is complicated in its own right, because, you know, it's do I hold these from them? How do I feel? He missed out on my entire life. Does he get to send my daughter's gifts? So, you know, it's always been complicated, but I've never really addressed it. But then it wasn't until my grandparents passed, and both of my grandparents, who I was incredibly close with, they passed within hours of each other last August of 2019. Oh, wow. And so that alone was really heavy. And so as I was processing their loss, you know, me and my mom, we would talk about the family history, and we'd talk about my great grandmother who I'd met and kind of remember from my childhood. We talked about all these funny stories and sad stories. And, you know, I realized that I knew so much about the maternal side of my family and the history. And like I said, since I've been part of family teams, I've really been able to understand multi-generational family, and whether it's good or bad, how all of that plays into my own parenting, my own fatherhood. So I'm dealing with that last August. And then a couple weeks later, I get a package in the mail from my biological dad, and it included a t-shirt that said the Rucker family reunion, and it had a family tree on it, and it included him and his 8 siblings.
Wow.
And so there was that, and then also in it, he had this poem that he wrote for my daughters and for his other 2 grandkids. So I'm still reeling from my grandparents being gone, which, you know, they were 91 and 88, great life, loved them. I got to spend so much time with them. They got to meet both of my daughters, which I was so thankful for, but still, of course, feeling that.
Yeah.
And then seeing this family tree, and I'm just looking at the shirt with the family tree on it, and I'm sitting there thinking, I don't know anything about that side of my family, absolutely nothing. And as much as his absence, has really played into my fatherhood, I realized, I think for my own fatherhood, I need to know a little bit more about where I came from, because I don't know much. I know he had a bunch of siblings. I didn't know there were 9 of them total. You know, I knew he was from Albany, but, you know, what brought him to Boston? What brought him, you know, everywhere? I knew his parents were together for a long time, but I didn't know anything about it. So my goal was to, because I was doing some writing on Medium at the time, and my goal was to reach out, document all these questions and answers, be able to put them on paper, and just write this whole kind of series on, you know, what it's like to be a father after growing up fatherless. And then I got this idea. I was like, well, if I'm gonna write these conversations out, I'm probably gonna have to record them. And if I record them, why don't I do a docuseries podcast? So I kind of brought out some ideas, thought of the name. The name was Complicated Fatherhood, because quite frankly, that's exactly what it is. And then around Thanksgiving of 2019, I called him after kind of 2 or 3 months of planning this and, you know, never having any conversation with him. I'd called him and said, hey, so this is what I'm thinking. I would like to interview you, and I would like to record the conversations for the purpose of a podcast. And I want to ask you some tough questions about your entire life, from your childhood, your family history, through you leaving, through what you did after you left, through us connecting, and just your overall thoughts on fatherhood, knowing that you had me and we really didn't have any connection. Like, what are your thoughts? So I just kind of dropped that on him.
Wow.
And he was like, you know, I'd be down. I'd be down for that. And I was like, all right. So, you know, we took the Thanksgiving, we took the holiday season, you know, to just kind of plan, or I took it to plan. And then in January of 2020, we started recording our conversations, and it was tough, to say the least, because, you know, being a part of HR, like, I've been in HR for a long time, and I can handle most things, like emotional conversations, all these things. I can typically remove myself from it. So I kind of went into the conversations just thinking, I'm going to ask questions, I'm going to get the answers. Like, I'm in a great place. I own my home. I've got two kids. I got a great wife. Like, my life is great. Like, I've got no complaints. But after that first conversation, just hearing him verbalize why he left, I was like, I remember sitting down after I hung up and I came out and told my wife, I was like, this is going to be a lot tougher than I thought it was. But yeah, so for 4 months we recorded conversations. I mean, we went through everything. I got answers that were good to hear. I got answers I didn't like hearing. But ultimately at the end of the project, it was great for me to have a family understanding of things that, quite frankly, I just never knew, especially about where I came from, you know, especially knowing that, like, I am Black. I really had no connection to the Black side of my family. And now, even though I don't know many of them, like, personally, I haven't spent time with many of them, like, I understand that my family was forced out of Jim Crow South after a series of lynchings in Shibuda, Mississippi. And that's actually what brought them to Albany, New York. So it was heavy, but I'm very thankful that I was able to do it.
Man. Well, man, good job, Ryan. I mean, I can't imagine how hard that would be, especially after your grandparents passed. Diving into your history, it's hard work, like, what you're doing. And I think it does set you up spiritually, emotionally, for your future, your kids, in a better place. But yeah, that's really hard to dive into that. Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to ask you too, just, you know, with the kind of Black stereotypes you were describing and how you want to overcome those stereotypes, but also just feeling like the stereotypes themselves seem to be injuring people. And, you know, and so I hear that tension. Like, I don't want to reinforce this, and I don't even want to maybe acknowledge, like, why, like, but what would you say to the dads listening, you know, in terms of, like, how do we encourage, how do we be careful? Is there anything that we might be subtly doing to promote these stereotypes, or, like, what helps, what hurts Black fathers that are really going for it, and what can we do to make sure we're not inadvertently discouraging anyone?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and, you know, I think it's tough because the answer is really going to go past really either of our lifetimes. I mean, it's going to take generations to just kind of, like, make a dent. You know, I'll start off with myself. Like, you know, here I am. I'm currently sitting in my home that I own with a good job. Again, kids, wife, like, all these different things. Like, it's phenomenal. But at the same time, like, all of it is specifically because both my grandma and my mom sacrificed their entire lives to set me up. Like, their entire lives. Like, I look now at what they sacrificed. Like, my mom, I won't go too much into her personal story, but, like, she worked multiple jobs. She didn't miss a single basketball game, baseball, track, like, you name it. She was there for everything. And she shielded me from a lot of that hurt that I think stereotypically goes along with absent fatherhood. Like, her on top of, like, my uncles and my grandparents, like, they were just surrounding me, like, the entire time. At no point in my childhood did I feel absent. But, you know, again, my father, he did leave. He left. He was gone. Yeah. And, you know, so on top of that, like, his father, what I found out through the conversations is that his father actually was not around as well, which was interesting because I thought he was, because him and his wife, my grandmother, were married for, I don't know, 50 years or so. But what I found out through these conversations is that, like, he went to Arizona. Like, he would literally come, like, get his wife pregnant and then he would leave. Like he missed the birth of some of his own kids. So like that was the example that he was showing for my father. And then on top of that, like his father actually died when he was a kid. So like going back and like now I'm getting close to like slavery era.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because I think a lot of people say like, oh, slavery was such a long time ago. But through my conversations, I realized I'm really only like 4 or 5 generations removed from it. And all of those generations played into the kids that they had and the brokenness that they had. And, you know, it was less than 100 years ago when my family was drastically affected by the lynchings going on in Jim Crow South and Mississippi and witnessed those and had to move to really save their own lives. And all of that brokenness, all of that trauma really plays into the lives that they lead, the families that they lead, and the intentionality that they're able to create for their kids, the margin they're able to create for their kids. Because quite frankly, so many, at least in my family, they were just trying to survive quite literally when it came to the South in the 20s and 30s. So, you know, I think to go forward to now, I think number one, like most important thing that we as a society can do is just is acknowledge that there's something off. You know, I think oftentimes, even when I bring up certain things like about race or about like fatherhood, black fathers in general, I think a lot of it gets dismissed outright because slavery was quote unquote so long ago, because Jim Crow South was so long ago, you know, because like everyone's on the same level playing field and everyone gets the same opportunities, but it's not the case. And I think it's just really important to acknowledge that something's wrong here. You know, there's that. And then after we acknowledge it, really invite other people into the conversations and say, hey, what is it? You know, what is wrong? And even like I did with my father, it was really tough for me to have some of these conversations because I felt like at points he was giving excuses for things that really there's no excuse for. Like you leaving your family, like I get that like he, you know, he was a black man in a majority white town. You know, he kind of spoke to maybe some of the issues that created. And I have no doubt that there were probably issues, especially within that town. Like I dealt with some of those same things as a kid. That being said, it was tough for me to hear some of those excuses. But what I did was I kind of put my personal feelings aside and I wanted to hear him, because as much as I think a lot of what he did was inexcusable, there were, especially when it came to the family lineage, there were some things that to me, I didn't like, but it made sense. Like it made sense that he, you know, that his father wasn't around. It made sense that he didn't have a great example of what fatherhood looked like for him. He had a broken example of what that looked like for him. Yeah. And I think whether you're black, white, like whatever the case is, if you have poor examples of fatherhood or just really anything, likely you're going to play into the same brokenness. Because even for me, like I'm still figuring out what it means to be a dad, because you know, I had a mom, I had a grandma, I had a grandpa who I love, but I didn't want to be like my grandpa. And I'm still figuring out what it means to be a dad, which is why family seems to mean so much to me. So it's really just listening to people. And then on top of that, taking actionable steps to be able to move forward and ensure that there's equity for these communities. So everybody can hopefully be closer to a level playing field so we can give our kids the opportunities that we want. Yeah. That's going to be really important.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I, you know, a huge part of what we are trying to emphasize is that families by nature and in God's own heart are multi-generational. Mm-hmm. And when you tell a dad that you can have an impact on your great-great-grandchildren, that also means that your great-great-grandparents had an impact on you. And it goes both ways.
Yeah.
And so what you're saying is, hey guys, I know that you want to have an impact on great-great-grandkids. But be aware of the fact that some people's great-great-grandparents were in very difficult situations, some of which had, you know, nothing to do with them, and that the implications for that, just like multi-generational family pierces generations in the future, the brokenness there is piercing into my life today. And, you know, it's something that we're recovering. And when you describe what your mom and your grandma, what they did to try to, you know, help you, and that it took that enormous effort to begin really a new legacy, that a lot of people are in that generation where they are going to have to, you know, that single mom is going to have to do that huge task to try to overcome the generational brokenness that, you know, her children are going to be experiencing. And that, man, we've got to be like actively trying to figure out if there's anything we can do to support that, because that future family line is at stake, and it's about to potentially be rewritten in a really positive way, but man, it can be touch and go. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like in your case, thank God, you know, all that sacrifice, you know, was really, you know, really paid off. And now you're where your family's at, but yeah, I hear what you're saying.
For sure.
Yeah.
And you hit it. I love the way you speak about like the family lineage and the lines. And, you know, it's when you go through Genesis, like you'll see, I mean, it's like, if you just listen to like the audio version, like there's like 20 minutes of like family lineage. It's like, this was this person's right. son. This was, it's just like, it goes on forever. So I think, you know, look, like God believes that the family lineage is incredibly important. If he didn't, then he wouldn't have put, you know, all of it. all of through Genesis to give you a foundation for like, hey, like this is who we are. Yes. And you know, so when I look at people who dismiss, you know, like you know, maybe 100 years ago because like, oh, well, that's, you didn't have to deal with that. It's like, right. No, it still plays into who we are. And, you know, I think one of, you know, after my grandparents passed, me and my mom were just kind of talking about, you know, my maternal side of the family. And for me, actually, one little or well-known fact about me is I don't drink. I don't drink alcohol. I never have, never will. Mm-hmm. And so when people hear that, they go like, wait a minute, like you've never had a sip of alcohol. And I say, no. And so when people ask why, like I'll usually give them a short answer, but if I have some time, I'll explain the fact that like my mom witnessed a lot of issues within our family. My grandparents owned a bar. And within that, she had witnessed some things that, you know, weren't necessarily healthy in terms of people over drinking and using alcohol for just a really not a great use. So, you know, my grandpa, you know, probably had some issues with alcohol. His mom for sure did. And my mom just saw like a lot of issues having to do with alcohol. So again, she had to stop it because she knew that our family lineage was affected by alcohol, like going back 100 plus years in terms of everything that we knew. So she actually wants to stop it. And then for me, like, I saw a little bit of that and just made the decision for myself to say like, I'm going to stop. So now my daughters are really the first in our family lineage to not see alcohol play such a negative effect because my mom did, my grandpa did, his mom did, her, you know, her parents did, like everybody on that side did. So you can see how long it takes to eliminate some of these like bad habits out of families. Like for us, 100 plus years, you know, so it just really shows the intentionality that goes into it.
Yeah, totally. I really wish the alcohol conversation would happen at that family level. Sometimes it happens at the church level, which always frustrates me. It's like, it's not a rule, but it's a family dynamic, and that you may need to make a family rule, in order to overcome, you know, a history of issues. And there's great, good precedent for that. I don't know if you've ever read, there's one of my favorite stories of multi-generational families in the Bible is at the end of Jeremiah, there's a story of the Rechabites. I don't know if you know that story, but it's a really hidden gem. And basically God tells Jeremiah, you know, bring in these Rechabites and, you know, put a bunch of wine in front of them and stand back and see what happens. And so he brings his family in and he pours a bunch of wine and the Rechabites say, sorry, we're not going to drink that. And Jeremiah says, well, why not? And he said, well, because, you know, X number of generations ago, our father made a rule that we were not supposed to drink wine and made a rule, a couple other rules that they weren't supposed to, they're supposed to live in tents. And he said, for generations, we've kept this rule. So sorry, Jeremiah, we're not going to drink your wine. And suddenly God speaks to Jeremiah and says, he says, look at this family. Like they are honoring, you know, this patriarch from the past. Why won't my children, Israel, honor me? Well, you know, so it's like this father who sees this amazing family that you know had some special multi-generational family rules, probably because there was something they were trying to specifically overcome or a particular family culture. And then the story ends with God pouring out this special blessing just on the Rechabites, just on this family. So I love that. Yeah, it's a cool story. It's just a chapter in Jeremiah that's like a little hidden gem. Well, man, this has been awesome. I wanted to ask you one more question too about your, so one of the things you mentioned is you really try to be intentional in crafting the culture. We talked about the ice cream business. You also mentioned like things like chores and things outside the house. You've been trying to come up with things to really be intentional with your kids. Any other ideas that you could throw out there that have worked for your family? We have a lot of young family, you know, fathers of young families listening to this. So I just love to get all the goodness. Well, what's working for your family?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm one of those individuals that wants my kids to be part of everything. Like, you know, like I said, we do the ice cream videos together. Like, I really don't want anything in my life to be done by myself. Like, I want to bring them all along, you know, and part of that comes with patience because things are going to take exponentially longer when you have your kids involved. But like, for example, this weekend, you know, we actually just bought an outdoor patio set, like an outdoor, like couch set, like a sectional couch, for our backyard, just cause like we're quarantined, like we're at home so much. It's like, let's really fix up our backyard. And so of course it's much easier to deal with the screws and the nuts and bolts and just kind of putting everything together by myself. But my daughter came out and she was like, can I help? And I was like, absolutely. So I would, you know, teach her how to work, you know, the screwdriver and how to, you know, like she would just hold on to some of the bits for me. And I would say like, all right, like one of the important things about being a helper is you have to be a really good listener. You know, so the whole project, you know, she'd help me out a little bit, you know, throughout. She of course wasn't able to really screw in everything, but I would like, you know, I would drill something in and then I would give her the screwdriver and she would kind of like finish it off. And, you know, so a couple hours later when it was all done, she got up from her quiet time and she came out. And the first thing she said, she goes, wow, Daddy, look at what we did. And I was like, yeah, that's right, baby. Like, we did do that together. And, you know, from a percentage wise, like, yeah, I probably did 99.5% of the work and she did like, you know, 0.5. But it doesn't matter because we did that together.
Yes.
And what I told her afterwards when we sat on the couch, I was like, you know, will you sit on the couch with me for the first time? And she's like, yeah. And I said, like, now, Ray, like when we come over and when our young adults come over and with family and friends come over and we sit at this couch, I want you to remember that the conversations that we're having together, the memories that we're making around this couch are because you and I actually built this together. Yeah. Mm. And she's like, wow. You know, so whether it's in the kitchen or just like building something, of course, as long as it's safe, you know, I just want her to be involved. I want both my girls to be involved. My youngest is, she just turned one, so it's a little bit different with her. But I just want them to be involved in everything. So they're just along for the journey. It's not my family. It's not my wife's family. It's our family together. And that's really important to me.
Man, that's huge. Anything you can do to really get to share those moments. What really strikes me, Ryan, about your story and even what you just described, that heart that you had to do that with your daughter and do this stuff as a family. It's, you're just somebody who has allowed the identity of fatherhood to go all the way into your heart. And I think there's a lot of dads who just, they don't realize they're resisting that. And it could be oftentimes we resist it because we were hurt by fathers. And so it's like, I don't like fatherhood. I don't like dads. I don't really care about being a dad. And for you, it just sounds like you've said, no, I'm going all the way. I'm letting this identity go all the way down to the bottom. Mm-hmm. And, and I'm going to, you know, and that's, it opens you up to being hurt as well. Like it opens up a lot of, it's more difficult to be selfish. It's, you get a lot, you can build the couch a lot faster without, you know, introducing, you know, your daughter into the process. But I don't know. Good job. I just love that, man. I really appreciate hearing your heart. And I just think this is such a great example and opportunity for people, for us dads and for me too. I'm like, am I letting that identity just seep into me? What are the things that are tripping me up? So that's, this has been an awesome conversation. Before we go, I wanted you to take a minute and just tell people where to find you, how to find the podcast, how to find your Instagram page that you're doing with your daughter. Tell us a little about, for those who would like to follow you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. The best place to find me is going to be on Instagram. It sounds crazy that I have three accounts that I'm going to say, but my personal one, which is just at Ryan Rucker, where it's just, you know, just me and posting everything. I have the ice cream account as well, which is at Be Ice Cream or Be Nothing. Mm-hmm. Kind of long, but it works really well. And then the third one, which I haven't done a lot of activity with yet, but you know, the one specifically for the podcast is going to be at Complicated Fatherhood. Mm-hmm. That one, I'm going to be a little more active come August and September, and you know, that's really where you're going to find a lot of the information about the podcast. Like I said earlier, I've recorded everything, so now it's just kind of putting the finishing touches on all the episodes so I can just release them for 8 straight weeks, week after week, and not have to go back and worry about like, editing in the middle of, you know, having a job and middle of regular life. I don't want to stress myself out that way, but those are probably the best places to find me.
Awesome. Well, man, thank you so much for being on. And I know that I'm excited about this podcast series. I can't wait to listen to it. And thank you so much for opening up your story. I know that what you described, what it means to you and for your future family. And I know that it will encourage and really give some guidance to a lot of guys who I think are also wrestling with thinking about, you know, how do I process my past. Yeah. And also, if you guys want to like hang out with Ryan and I, jump on the 5 Minute Fatherhood Facebook group. We're both pretty active in that group. We love talking about these topics. And Ryan, you are my first interview with somebody that I got to know straight from that group into this dad building teams. Thanks for being the inaugural dad on the podcast from the group.
For sure. I'm honored to be, like I said earlier, that group has just been so much, so life-giving for me as a human, as a Christian, as a father. So just thank you so much for everything you're doing there.
Awesome. Thanks, Ryan.
All right, guys, that's all we have for today's episode. Remember, you have what it takes as a father equipped by the Holy Spirit to lead your family as a multi-generational team on mission. And as always, remember to let us know what you thought about today's episode at Family Teams on Instagram, at Family Teams on Facebook. Search for us there, easy to find, and you will find us. And let us know what you thought, whether something that stood out, something that was encouraging, or some feedback you would like to give us. All right, have a great rest of the day.